Mom, it's school shopping time.
On it. Ooh, Target has low prices on select school supplies, like 25-cent crayons and 50...
Brew your own bliss. Only with Starbucks for Nespresso.
Visualize your debt picture.
They say that Richard Corey owns one half of this whole town, with political connections to spread his wealth around. Born into society, a banker's only child, he had everything a man could want: power, grace, and style. But I work in his factory, and I curse the life I'm living, and I curse my poverty.
Good evening, everybody. It is time for PDX Progressive Talk Radio. Apparently we misplaced our intro music, so it's Sherry, and we're happy to be here. It's been a lovely past few days in Portland. The temperature is below three digits. Hallelujah. The I thought I put the intro song on the top of the run sheet where it says intro song, but we won't worry about that. So it's, have you heard? First, I'm going to get off on a tangent. And we're excited tonight because we're having our candidates have for District 3 in Portland City Council's fabulous reorganization. We are having District 3 candidates tell us who they are. I have some questions for them. They each have time to answer those questions. It's just like what we did with District 4 a couple months ago. I want to thank everybody for joining us for the honor of your time. If you're listening live, you're listening to PDX Progressive Talk Radio on KBOO Community Radio on Wednesday, July 24th, 2024. You are listening live, and again, I want to thank you for your time, but I also want to give a huge shout out, congratulations to Kamala Harris. She is the presumptive nominee of the Democratic Party for president, and that she has had over the past 24 hours record level donations within, I think it was 36 hours, she was up to $100 million, and the right is just having a conniption. They are having a heart attack, and it's something so pleasant to watch. So we are supposed to be starting our District 3 candidates as a candidate showcase. I sent it to the Air Room email. Can you check that? Oh, did I not let you in? Oh, I am not up. Oh, my bad. I'm so sorry, guys. All right, hold on. Oh, gee, I have to push a button. And I guess I have to invite everybody in. One moment, please. Technical difficulties. I got so excited, I forgot where I was and what I was doing. And I'm not going to do that. We're not doing that. Okay, so I'm inviting. All right, so I'm admitting everybody now. Sorry, everybody. Hello, welcome, everybody. Are you in? I've invited, I have everybody in. There you are. Woohoo, there you are. And I need to mute me, because you should be able to hear me on the
recording
radio.
In progress.
We are not taking any calls this evening. Can the everybody in the Zoom hear me?
This is Rex. I can hear you.
Thank you, Rex.
I was getting a lot of messages on chat.
Yeah, this is Theo. I can hear you.
Thank you.
This is Tiffany. I can hear you.
Thank you, everybody. That's fabulous. Okay, good, because I was afraid if I had the mic on the Zoom up, then we would be lost. So I want to welcome everyone from District 3. Thank you for joining me here. And what I do with this is I call out the first person I see on my list, right? So let me... I should be able to change my view. There we go.
Just for a chance to speak, I'll say I hear you.
Awesome. Very good. Very good. So the first person on my list here is Angelita. And I'm going to have you start, and then we'll have Chris, and we'll go on for the everybody else. So welcome, everybody. What I would like you to do first, and we communicated this, if you could each give us a one-minute opening introduction of who you are and what obviously you're in District 3 and why you want to run. So let's start with Angelita.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for having me today. My name is Angelita Murillo, or Angelita Murillo, for those of you that speak Spanish. I'm an immigrant from Paraguay, a tiny country in South America, and I'm an anti-hunger policy advocate and legislative strategist at Partners for a Hunger-Free Oregon. And basically that means that I get to convene community legislators and agencies like the Oregon Department of Human Services in trying to pass anti-hunger policies and expand food access to people. So that's really where my passion is at, making sure that people who are underserved in our communities are getting everything that they need from government. I previously worked in City Hall doing constituent services, and I created a TikTok by the handle PNW Policy Angel to explain local government and politics to people. I'm so excited to run for District 3. My focus is going to be on sanitation, housing and homelessness, and transportation policy. So look forward to getting a chance to talk with everybody. Thank you.
Angelita, that's fabulous. Thank you so much. Chris Flannery, it is your turn to let us know who you are.
Thanks. So, hi, my name is Chris Flannery. I use they, them pronouns, and I'm running to represent District 3 on the Portland City Council. I bring a clear vision of a thriving Portland with the foundation in public service to get the job done. So I have 13 years of experience working in affordable housing. I've been at the Portland Housing Bureau for the past 10 years or so. Before that, I worked for a nonprofit housing developer when I was serving as an AmeriCorps volunteer. I'm running because I love Portland. I grew up on the East Coast, and Portland has been my home since I got here in 2013. I came out as queer in South Carolina, so as you can imagine, Portland was life-changing. I had space to explore who I was, and I found my community here, both in the queer community and in the labor movement. I've put down roots here, and I'm ready to serve my city. I grew up in a working class family. My mom was a nurse, my dad was a postal worker, and we would open our home to people who needed support, whether they were struggling with addiction or a divorce. And I learned early on that everyone needs help sometimes, and that we give back to each other. That's what service is about, and that's why we're here in a society. So the way I was raised, my time in public service, and my union activism inform my priorities: living wages, stronger safety nets, and thriving communities.
Thank you, Chris. I really appreciate you being here. I have to move on to Matthew Anderson.
Yes. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, Matthew, we can.
Yes, well, thank you so much for having us. My name is Mr. Anderson. I am Matthew Anderson, and I am running for a seat on Portland City Council from the 3rd District to ensure that myself and my neighbors have an opportunity to vote for someone who understands that the role of a city councilor or a commissioner is about more than policies and programs. The unique responsibility of the job is to provide service to our constituents, to provide services to you. It is to provide you service, it is to provide you support, counsel, advice, if necessary, even solace. I have not spent my career as an activist, even though activists are necessary. And I have not spent my career as a bureaucrat, but bureaucrats are necessary, and we need good versions of both. But I have been a servant, either as a veteran of the United States Air Force, or currently as a high school math teacher, or even in my career in IT, literally providing customer service.
Thank you.
And I want to bring that to the city council.
Thank you, Matthew. I really appreciate you being here, and that's an awesome introduction. Hey, Rex, you're up next.
Okay. Well, I'm excited to be here tonight. And I've lived in Portland for about 46 years, and I have been a KBOO listener every one of those years. My source of information about the city, I remember listening to city council being broadcast live. It was really exciting way back in the day. But I'm running for city council because I think I have the skills and experience, as well as the passion, that we really need to make this new government work and deliver services and the leadership we need. Just a few things of my experience. I've been a leader in the nonprofit world. I started the Bicycle Transportation Alliance back in 1990. I helped start the Coalition for a Livable Future, which was over 100 organizations that came together to talk about how do we make this region more sustainable. And then I started and successfully ran an effort to restore outdoor school for all Oregon kids. We passed a ballot measure in 2016. The state level, 35 of 36 counties voted yes. It was great work. And then I think most importantly for this position, I served 12 years on the Metro Council, which is the only directly elected regional government in this whole country. And it operates very much like the new council, with a policymaking board of seven and a manager. And I felt I was pretty successful at Metro, injecting ideas about climate, social justice into our land use and planning, but also looking at how do you make that agency that runs things like the Expo Center, Convention Center, the Portland Five, the zoo, solid waste system, make it more accountable and effective.
Thank
so that's
you.
Why I'm running, because it's a great opportunity to help make this city a great place for everyone. And there's tools and skills I will bring to the position to help make this group successful.
I need to move on. I'm sorry. Thank
that's
you.
Fine.
Tiffany, you're up.
Hi, my name is Tiffany Koyama Lane, or Teacher Tiffany. My pronouns are she, her. I teach third grade at Sunnyside Environmental School. I'm a union leader and organizer, and I'm a mom to my two sweet boys. I've taught in public schools for 15 years, and the failures of our city show up in my classroom. In my classroom, kids have brought their dirty laundry in when they do not have access to washers and dryers. In my classroom, kids have lost their housing in the middle of the year. I'm Yonsei, which means I'm fourth generation Japanese American, and my family had their farm taken away and were forced into incarceration camps during World War II. They had their dignity and livelihood stolen from them, and I carry the legacy of my ancestors in the knowledge that dignity is a basic human right. I'm running for the new Portland City Council District 3 because I believe that City Hall should be a place of service for our children and their families, for working people, and for everyone in our city. My vision for Portland is a safe, housed, connected city where everyone can thrive. And I'm so excited to be here talking with you all about that tonight.
Thank you, Tiffany. And Jesse Cornett. Jesse, you're up.
Hey, Jesse Cornett here, obviously running for Portland City Council. District 3, I have worked 19 out of the last 24 years in the policy and electoral process. A couple of the fun things I've done of late is I served on both of Bernie Sanders' presidential campaigns, including being the role colloquially known as body man during the 2020 campaign. I traveled with him if he was outside of his house or hotel room for the final 6 months of a campaign without pause. Great experience. Came home, passed something called, at the time, Cover All People. 55,000 Oregonians now have access to health care as a result of the work that we did. Those are folks that would have been eligible but for their immigration status. So I was really proud of the work and the coalition that we built to do that. I'm running because I know there's a heck of a lot more we can do to resolve homelessness in this city. As somebody in recovery, I work in addiction by day and absolutely understand the challenges and how to meet them. And lastly, I want to restore our leader as an environmental champion on climate change in Portland.
Thank you, Jesse. Dan Gilk, you're up next.
Hi, I'm Dan Gilk, running for District 3. My background is actually in software engineering, but I'm taking some time right now as a full-time father to my newborn daughter. And really, a lot of my platform focuses on how I want Portland to be for her when she's old enough to really enjoy it as a young adult and then into adulthood. A lot of my platform focuses on expanding housing supply and increasing housing density and building different housing options for different lifestyles. And that, of course, is going to be paired with, or has to be paired with, improved alternative transit options. Dedicated bus lanes, improved biking infrastructure, better neighborhood walkability. I feel very strongly about creating dense, walkable, safe public spaces for us and our kids to enjoy.
Thank you, Dan. Theo?
Hello. Thanks for having me. I'm Theo Hathaway Sainer. I'm running because I want everyone in Portland to be able to afford a home. I want everyone to have access to mental health resources and drug addiction resources if they need them. I grew up in a small coastal logging town. My mom was a waitress. My dad worked at the mill. And I was there when the timber industry collapsed. And so I understand the value of resilience and community strength. I currently, on my day job, work at Portland Community Reinvestment Initiatives, an affordable housing nonprofit in Northeast Portland. Every day, I interact with folks who are the most housing insecure, and I see firsthand how badly we need more affordable housing. And I know that together, this is a really exciting field of candidates, and I know that together we can make Portland thrive.
Theo, thank you. Daniel, you're up.
Hi, I'm Daniel DeMello. I'm a second-generation American, a lifelong Portlander, a queer Portlander, a homeowner, an engineer, and I've been organizing in Portland for more than 10 years. I'm in this race because of the experience I've had chairing a tenants union in an income-restricted Old Town complex, the Multnomah County Central Community Budget Advisory Committee, overseeing the county's $4 billion budget, and the Joint Office of Homeless Services Community Budget Advisory Committee overseeing our $400 million homelessness budget. This year, knowing that we're set to spend more than $70,000 per homeless person, we asked the city and county to commit and say their multi-billion homeless plan would lead to one less person sleeping on the street, and they refused to make that commitment. Wow. I'm an engineer, I'm a numbers guy, and I know that ending unsheltered homelessness requires beginning with reducing it. I'm committed to ending unsheltered homelessness in 2 years, building the housing abundance required to reduce housing costs for all Portlanders, and building the public safety system required to ensure every Portlander feels safe walking in their neighborhood late at night. Thank you.
Thank you, Daniel. I want to tell each and every one of you before we move on, I am completely and totally honored to have each of you on this show tonight. You are, all of you are fabulous. And, you know, there's only three people who can move into these positions. All of you deserve it. All of you do. I'm beyond. Anyway, so I'm getting goosebumps. As we go to the first question, we're going to speak on homelessness. In Portland, we've been dealing with a gripping, significant homeless crisis. What specific policies or initiatives would you propose or support to provide immediate relief for those experiencing homelessness? And we can consider immediate relief within 6 months. I'm sorry, Angelita.
Thank you. Yeah, I think obviously homelessness is one of the top issues for most people in our city. I'm one of two candidates who has experienced homelessness within the city of Portland. I was houseless for a little under a year while I was in college. So the issue hits very close to me, especially as an anti-hunger policy advocate. I think that we need short-term and long-term solutions, and we can't have things that are one size fits all, right? So when I think about building shelters for short-term solutions, I think that we need to focus on domestic violence shelters. I think that when women and children are the ones that are being economically impacted, we need to make sure that those folks are safe. I also think that we need to follow shelter models like Right to Dream 2. It's an autonomous shelter model where the houseless folks that live in that space actually have a council and are able to make decisions with each other. I think that when we involve people in the decisions that are made within their community, we get better outcomes. And I think that's something that's really been missing from a lot of these decision-making spaces, is that we're not talking to the people that are directly impacted.
Thank you,
Angela. As far as long-term,
Okay. We have 30 seconds. I apologize.
Gosh, I have so I'll much come to back say. To I'm you. Sorry.
That's okay. I'll come back to you for mental health. That's the next question. Chris?
30 seconds. I got my watch out. All right. So, one issue with getting services out the door has been inadequate staffing for the service providers. And so, increasing wages to a living wage would help with hiring and retention. It would also help prevent working folks from falling into houselessness themselves due to poverty wages. So I would work to pass legislation requiring a living wage. And there are three exceptions to the current state law that preempts that. So we could do that for city workers, subcontractors, and as a requirement for receiving city incentives. So get more workers to get that money we've already voted in out the door and helping people.
Thank you, Chris. Matthew, you're up. 30 seconds, sir.
Yes, thank you. I quickly will say my campaign is represented by a duck because I believe that I'm a little bit different. I look at this question differently. I look at the people I serve and I say, what policy? Number one, I support any policy that increases supply. But as I read the question and I say, what specific policies or initiatives would you propose to support or provide immediate relief? It is to the workers and homeowners and residents and parents who are being impacted by homelessness. Now, I understand that the issue of those who are experiencing homelessness is a complicated one, and there are no end to issues and proposals to solve it. But the people we work for are the people who pay for these things, and those people need relief first.
Thank you, Matthew. I have to move on. Rex, you're up, sir.
I'm up, great. Okay, so this is, I think, the immediate 30-second answer is that we can open up enough night shelter beds that would accommodate everyone at much less than the cost that we spend right now on policing people who are out there at night and dealing with the issues that come up with the crime and the trafficking and the preying on people who are outside. So number one, get night shelter beds open. Number two is to have day shelters that are staffed with support so people have access to addiction treatment, mental health treatment, jobs, housing, assistance. And then finally use what they've used in places like Houston, which is individualized case management. So people, we know them by name, we know what they're facing, and we can try to connect them up with the services they need.
Thank you, Rex. Tiffany, you're up.
So I have a neighbor who was a houseless senior who got housing after 20 years of being unsheltered. And this process and paperwork, it was incredibly complex and time consuming. He was put on many wait lists for multiple buildings. His advocate had to spend months working on this, you know, with their already very heavy caseload. So the county and the city need to work much more closely together. So there is a single waiting list to streamline the system. Also, we need a pathway for more jobs in this area and protections for workers who are doing this work who are already very burnt out. Finally, we should not be criminalizing people who do not have shelter. That makes it harder to get housing.
Thank you, Tiffany. Jesse Cornett, you are up.
This crisis that we're in with houselessness and mental health, which are inextricably intertwined, have a start date. It was January 20th, 1981. We all know that. Ronald Reagan dismantled our community mental health structure, robbed us of all funding moving forward. And I just want to say to this, my answer is there are no immediate fixes. Politicians looking for quick fixes are what made the crisis as bad as it is now. And only 30 seconds on this answer is not sufficient.
It's the only amount of time I had to make it to allow a democratic discussion on this issue. So that's why everybody got 30 seconds. And I do appreciate the comment. I agree.
I'd gladly listen to other folks go into more depth and cede some of my time. I think it'd be a service to your listeners. Thank you so much.
Yes, sir. Actually, you know, I'm up for interviewing everybody one-on-one at some point at a later date because you all are influential in this community and you all bring so much to it. So we will be talking in the future if you so choose. Dan, it's your turn.
Sure. I appreciate Jesse's candidness about there not being at one quick solution here. I'm very, very housing focused. So as in developing the supply of housing, I don't believe we can ration our way out of a supply shortage. So I do think that's the most important solution, although of course that will take time to build out the homes we need. In the shorter term, we do need to get night shelters open. That's very important for the people living on the streets' own safety and having a place to go where they won't be assaulted or robbed or any other horrible things that happen. And I do think it's very important that we get like some software solutions as far as like measuring and reporting and having a database of who's living out where and how can we contact them.
Thank you. That's actually a very good suggestion for something that can be implemented quite quickly, so you can track and manage who is out on the streets and who has received housing and where everybody is. It's a huge heavy lift with a lot of manpower needed, so that would be taxes on the city of Portland. But we'll move on. Theo.
Yeah, I'm really proud to be part of this panel. Everyone has such great ideas. Personally, I am on the board of an organization called We Shine, and we build neighborhood-based pod villages for transitional housing, so folks can enter and have a safe place to rest with a locked door and get back on their feet. We provide wraparound services. The approach is we focus on the most vulnerable people that are living outside. So that's LGBTQIA plus people, BIPOC, disabled folks, the ones that are most vulnerable to the crime that we're all just talking about.
Thank you, Theo.
You're welcome.
Daniel, you're up.
You know, homelessness, it involves mental health and drug addiction, housing costs. There's a lot of complex parts, but the sheltering part and the unsheltered problem is simple. I think everyone here can say that we need more shelter and more services, but I'm the only one here who can say exactly how many more shelter beds and how much more services we need. We have not made a commitment to ending unsheltered homelessness here in Portland for the last 9 years. I'm committed to ensuring Portland builds the 2,000 to 4,000 shelter beds we need to shelter every person on the streets. In 1941, we built 18,000 shelter units in 110 days. I think more than 80 years later, we can build 4,000 units over 2 years.
Thank you, Daniel. Part of my reason, and I will be doing a show about this at a later date, but part of my reason for asking the homelessness question is because everybody wants to approach it in a reactionary thoughtful way, right? Instead of what got people there, right? So a lot of people who are homeless and dealing with mental health issues didn't start off as drug users with huge mental health problems that manifest themselves into something significantly more serious. So I was hoping, and I was hoping from District 4, and I'm hoping from all of you candidates that you kind of take a line into what is putting people in these places, not how to solve after they're there, right? Yes, that needs attention, but how did they get there? So you have corporate greed, you have private equity buying up homes, you have exponential cost of rent and property management companies exponentially raising those rents on an annual basis, sometimes more than they're actually allowed to. So these are some areas that where I was hoping to go, but I understand taking my question verbatim, a reactionary response is appropriate. Moving forward on health, mental health. Access to mental health services remains a critical issue in Portland, particularly among the homeless population, as we know. How do you plan to enhance the availability and quality of mental health services in the near future? Angelita, 30 seconds.
Thank you. Yes, I think that we need to fully fund Portland Street Response. We clearly need a non-armed, non-police response to mental health crisis calls on our street. We need it to be functioning citywide, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. And I think that what we just saw at the national level with the murder of Sonia Massey,
yes,
a woman who was experiencing a paranoid delusion or schizophrenic episode and called police for help. And they came to her home and they murdered her in cold blood. And the fact that Portland has a parallel in that national story as well, the fact that our city has been under investigation by the Department of Justice for the past 15 years or so because our police have killed too many people experiencing a mental health crisis means that we obviously need a non-armed, non-police response. So that's really what I think Portland needs to do as a first step to evolving our emergency response system.
Thank you, Angelita. Chris?
So I absolutely agree with expanding Portland Street Response 24/7 citywide. I'd also say that it's important to build our base of mental health providers. My wife, she does private therapy. She's a social worker. And what I've been hearing a lot of is how people are being forced out of the field because they're burnt out. Mm-hmm. The pandemic changed things for people. And unless we get a living wage, we're not going to be able to have enough providers to meet the needs of the populations here in Portland.
Perfect. Matthew.
Yes, thank you. For years, I served as a Social Security payee and housed a family friend who suffered from schizophrenia and bipolar disorder and also some drug use disorders. And what I can say is what everyone has said or will say and agree with, that these are extraordinarily difficult problems to address. And as Chris just made mention with her partner, the people who work in that that are highly paid as they should be. What I will say is that as we face these issues, I will not criticize my neighbors and taxpayers if they can't pay all that's needed to solve all these problems.
Great. Thank you, Matthew. Rex, 30 seconds.
Boy, these are tough questions for 30 seconds. But again,
it's just an idea yeah. to get started.
Well, let's throw two things out here. One, that mental health is not an issue with homeless people. We have one of the highest mental health, Oregon actually ranks at the very bottom of the country in terms of the most people who have addiction or mental health problems. And they're not all homeless. It's very difficult to get access to good service, period. We also rank very low in terms of how many beds we have out there in terms of getting people into help. I think the latest report said we need 60% more beds than we have today available for people who just are mentally ill. And it doesn't matter whether you're living in a house, whether you're part of family, whatever. The role of the city is to provide that leadership and demand that action takes place. Most of this is funded through the state and federal dollars. And how that is allocated and used is of critical importance to everyone who lives here. City of Portland doesn't have a direct connection on that. But it can certainly stand up and say that this needs to be addressed because it affects our people who live in our community.
Thank you, Rex. Tiffany.
Our system in Oregon is highly decentralized. Folks who need mental health treatment do not have a lot of easy to navigate options. So just as with homelessness, City Council needs to push for a much closer partnership with the county. Something like the Old Town Clinic, where people can access primary care and behavioral health care in one place, that's a great start. It also means fully funding and expanding programs like Portland Street Response and also taking a housing first approach. We also don't have enough licensed psychiatrists or other behavioral health providers in Oregon. Washington State has created training programs for this, and we should be pushing for the same.
Thank you. Jesse.
In the 1980s, the city and the county divvied up roles. And one of the things that was sent to the county was human services. And that's largely where it remains, mm-hmm. except that our police officers became frontline for mental health services. And that's a shame. As somebody who had their closest friend alive shot in the back by a Portland police officer, this is a very near and dear topic to my heart. And so I think it's expanding PSR, but it's also hiring the right community police officers and providing the right training in order to get it right moving forward.
On point. Dan.
Yes. I'd like to echo what Rex's point about this primarily and being the county's financial responsibility. So I'm wary of us building up too much resources at the city level that are kind of at odds with what the county's goals are. I'd much rather direct our funding and our focus on how can we work with the county in their goals? So that's how I see our role as city council here.
Okay.
I do support expanding PSR in a way that, in the sense that we need a sort of police light alternative to deal with people that are having nonviolent breakdowns. But it is important that whatever this police light alternative is has the ability to more strongly commit folks that are having like a really difficult time.
Thank you, Dan. Theo?
Yeah, I feel like I'm cheating off other people's homework. I also believe that we should fully fund and expand the Portland Street Response. You know, we need unarmed people out there dealing with folks that are, you know, dealing with acute mental crisis. The city can also help promote new therapies like psychedelics.
Mm. Thank you, Theo. Daniel.
Yeah, I would echo Jesse's point that our role here is limited. Section 328 in the city code gives up our health bureau to the county so long as we have a contract with them. We might look at eliminating that contract so we can have more direct control over our health services here, if that wouldn't reduce the amount of services we can deliver. But we should have a conversation about city-county consolidation. It can be done with a simple majority vote at the new city council. And that would provide and ensure that anyone working in mental health with the county is working in the same building, working with the same people as are doing Portland Street Response, as they're doing CHAT or any other program through our public safety system. And I would support investigating that so we can make sure that we have actual comprehensive and non-duplicative services, because we spend twice as much as some of the top mental health care systems in this state, but we're not getting results.
Fabulous answers from all of you. Thank you so much. Revitalizing Portland. Portland's economy and urban environment is essential for all of the city's future. What measures would you implement to stimulate economic recovery and development, support small businesses, and attract new investments as you're probably aware, many of the office spaces in Portland are empty, and it's probably good to fix that. Angelita.
Yeah, thank you so much for this question. I had a really rich conversation at the Roseway Neighborhood Association on this issue. They have a discussion around neighborhood corridors and closing down certain areas of the neighborhood to revitalize small businesses and let them thrive. I would also love to see more pedestrian and foot traffic in the areas of District 3 and Inner Southeast. Mm-hmm. I think that when we close streets so that pedestrians and bikers can walk through, you create a space where people want to hang out for a long time. If we did that in the neighborhood corridors, these little business areas, they would get a lot of attention and a lot of buy-in. So I'm really interested in using environmental design to address some of that.
Thank you, Angelita. Chris, you're up.
Thanks. I agree with Angelita. Like, let's build up our neighborhoods and commercial corridors to encourage folks to spend time in that public square, creating those needed third spaces for people to engage civically and bringing life back into the streets. But I also want to see us create job programs to train our next generation of workers. I'd love to see a modular housing manufacturing situation so that we have those necessary materials to feed the housing boom. And also, let's use some of that green energy money to upgrade our grid and prepare for a solar future. We can fund, we can incentivize, or we can mandate. And I am open to all sorts of solutions to get to where we need to go.
Thank you, Chris. Matthew Anderson.
Yes, thanks. So as an engineer, development is near and dear to my heart, and I would encourage your listeners to go to MrAndersonFor3.org to see some of the things that I might suggest. As a representative, I would reach out to the neighborhood, however, but as a root cause thing, the first thing that I would do to foster development is work with whomever I could on the council to rebuild Peabot's main garage. I'm sure everyone's seen an article a few months back about how bad it is. I'll be quiet in a minute. And you can't do anything about transportation with a garage like that. So the first thing I would do is work on that.
Thank you, Matthew. Rex, you're up.
Another small question. Thank you. I actually think that our economy is thriving for the most part, the small business community part. You go to the neighborhoods, they're lively, the retail and the restaurants are doing well. I think the challenges are not the empty office buildings downtown. That's very difficult for the property owners there, of course. The model has changed. The world's changed. People do not commute to work anymore. Mm-hmm. Here's what I think the major challenges I think we need to deal with outside of that is one is it's difficult for companies to find talented people. We have low high school and college graduation rates in Portland. We're disinvesting in our universities. Less than 15% of Portland State University's budget comes from the state. So higher tuition, less offerings. Hmm. Our housing costs are high. We used to be the cheap location on the West Coast. So firms that wanted to locate and find talented people would come to Portland. They could afford to be here. And finally, this one small part is how to make our development process less complicated and time-consuming and money-consuming. I think those are three things I'd look at that we actually have control over or we can collaborate with and support our universities, our schools.
Rex, I have to move on. Thank you so much. Tiffany, your turn.
I, like many others, am really tired of seeing vacant lots and empty buildings. The strategy of tax breaks for big companies to force workers back into downtown offices, it's not working. So we have to rethink our strategies. City government needs to have a bigger role in dictating what happens with some of these buildings. Real estate companies should not be allowed to keep rents high and properties vacant. I would look into a vacancy tax and streamline permitting for empty buildings and lots. So we need to think creatively and make sure small businesses and nonprofits are given opportunities to get affordable space.
Thank you, Tiffany. Jesse.
Well, I think absolutely everything that each of us has been talking about tonight, especially on homelessness and mental health, are going to lead to a more economically vibrant Portland. The reality is that the world has changed. Some of the issues we're seeing aren't just exclusive here to Portland. COVID happened, the workplace changed, Amazon happened, retail changed, and the cities that really capture the new trends and build more towards residential than commercial than retail are really going to win at the end of the day.
Thank you, Jesse. Dan.
Yes, I completely agree. We really need to focus on building up residential capacity, and that looks like increasing density, mostly via upzoning and increasing height limits. And again, I think I repeat myself, but improving walkability and bikeability. These are Angelita touched on this. I feel very passionate about creating walkable neighborhood spaces, shutting down chunks of streets. Studies have shown that this is a big boon for small business, just getting foot traffic out there and getting more people.
Thank you, Dan. Theo.
I believe that affordable housing is economic revitalization. So when people can afford their rent, mm-hmm. they can afford to shop and eat at local businesses, and large employers have a thriving workforce. I also agree with Tiffany, we need to tax vacant lots that are zoned as residential and people are just sitting on them. I'd also like to see our review for designs be the first eyes look at a review of its design be AI, and that they do that in Boston. Mm. It's so much quicker way to get through the design process.
Thank you, Theo. Daniel.
I mean, you know, looking across the city, anyone out in the neighborhoods knows that foot traffic in our commercial spaces that aren't downtown is up 20 to 30% since the pandemic. But the reason we're not seeing revitalization downtown is because, frankly, as someone here trying to have an office downtown in the next year, I would not feel extremely comfortable asking my staff to stay late to have them catch the bus home late at night. We need to address the public mm-hmm. safety. We need to address the disorder on our streets and do everything we can, not increase taxes. You know, we need to make sure that people are excited to bring businesses in here. And I've made a commitment to not raising taxes until we address homelessness. But we also need to build that housing abundance to ensure that we're no longer the most increasingly expensive city on this West Coast.
Thank you, Daniel. Okay, so you guys are fabulous. And I think the voters have some serious thinking to do when they look at their ballots. So what I'd like to do here is offer each of you a minute to give closing arguments for our KBOO listeners at PDX Progressive Talk Radio. And we'll start with Angelita.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me here. I think as one of the only candidates that has, one of two candidates that has experienced unsheltered homelessness and someone who is an anti-hunger policy advocate, I'm really focused on working for folks who have the least among us in our city and who are the least heard within City Hall. I want to make sure that we are bringing those people to the policy table. And I think that I have the policy knowledge to make that happen. When I worked at the city, we talked about creating long-term housing options, a variety of different options. And a lot of it was just a matter of petty infighting and a lack of political courage. When the Concordia University dorms were available for purchase, we could have easily turned that into abundant housing for people. It wouldn't have cost a lot to renovate. And all it would have taken was changing the zoning from a school to housing. So I think that we have a lot of candidates here who have imaginative solutions, and that's what we're going to need on City Council. And that's exactly what I'm going to bring. So if you would like to learn more, you can go to my website, angelitaforportland.com. Thank you.
Thank you, Angelita. And thank you for participating with us tonight. Chris.
All right. Thank you. So I'm going to start with, remember, Chris Flannery. You can find me at chrisforportland.com. And I want to just, you know, I know how the city works. I've worked for the city since 2013. I've seen how policy hits the road, and I've watched commissioners come in and kind of have to learn the ropes first before they can be effective. And I think I come in with that knowledge already. I've led my union. I've been part of my union for over 10 years. And this is a group of folks, over 1,000 of us. We don't always agree on everything. And so I know how to represent people where we may not agree on every detail, but as long as we have the same goal, we can get there together. And then I'd like to take a little bit of my time and just say, hey, everybody, look up portland.gov/vote. Figure out how the ballot is going to work. You get to choose 6 of us to rank, and you're going to rank us 1 through 6. You want to make sure that you're choosing people that you believe in, because we're going to have a chance to have over 75% of us represented by somebody in City Council who we voted for. So again, portland.gov/vote. Learn about the new ballot that you're getting and consider who's going to make your top 6. Thank you.
Thank you. You've given me some ideas of what to put on my channels. Matthew, you're up, sir.
Yes, yes. Thank you so much again for your time. And as I said when I started, I haven't been an activist or a bureaucrat. I have been a servant. And as hopefully everyone can hear, for better or worse, I don't sound like the rest of my candidates. I hope that everyone means well. I promise, a man of God, and believe that I will be judged by how we treat the least of these. But as a counselor, as a commissioner, I will represent the workers, the parents, the business owners in this city. And it's those people whose considerations I will take into every meeting and behind every closed door. Please, when you have a chance, go to MrAndersonFor3.org and take a look. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for being here, Matthew. I appreciate it. And we all appreciate it. Rex.
Well, first of all, thank you very much for hosting this. I'm a strong believer in having good community communications. We've lost most of our newspapers and a lot of our print journalism. KBOO presents the news and information that's really important for the people to know. Plus, they play great music. My favorite is the bluegrass on Saturday morning. Yes. But to go to this, reasons why I'm running is because I have the skills and experience of actually governing in a very similar position to the new city council. And I think this will be very critical. We don't have time to start over. We don't have time to have fights over policy ideas. We need to start thinking about how do we actually deliver solutions. And that's what I'm skilled in, what my experience has been. The last 10 years I've been working with nonprofits on helping their boards become more collaborative and focused on their goals and outcomes they're trying to achieve, and had great experience with groups from the Portland Gay Men's Chorus to the formerly the Portland Audubon Society and others. That's, again, what I bring to the table. We'd love to be there and help make this new experiment successful.
Do you have a website, Rex?
I do. I was just going to say it. RexForPDX.com.
Fabulous. Tiffany?
Thank you. I want to come back to something I mentioned at the beginning of this, which is that I want a safe, housed, connected Portland. Safe means families feel safe on our sidewalks, safe biking to school, safe in our parks, safe in communities. Safe means safety for everyone, including people who are living on the streets. Housed means our working folks in Portland can afford to live here. More affordable housing and better models for our land use, getting people housing when they need it, and helping people stay housed. So tenant protections and eviction defense. Mm-hmm. Connected means people can access services when they need them, not getting hit with a wait list. Connected means getting support when in crisis. Connected means neighbors helping neighbors. It also means things like all kids have access to swim lessons and joyful public programs. It means beautiful public spaces people can access via transit and safe bike lanes. Portland will be a safe, housed, connected city when we all come together to make City Hall a place of service for our children and families. I know it's going to take a lot of hope, energy, and hard work, and I also know that we can do it. You can visit teachertiffanyforthepeople.com to learn more.
Thank you, Tiffany. Thank you for being here. Jesse, you're up.
All right. Well, thank you, KBOO listeners. Sherry, definitely thank you as well. I, too, am a KBOO listener. I listen to some of the show Rex mentioned on Saturday morning, but I most often hang out and listen from noon to 2 on Saturday, if that says anything about my musical interest. I have deep experience working on collaborative solutions throughout my career that I'll bring to bear should I be so honored as to serve on the city council. I come as a compassionate human being. I think I've even shown tonight I am very passionate. I think the vast majority of us on this call are running under Portland's wacky small donor elections program. So if I said something, or if anyone else on this call said something tonight that inspires you, contributions of $5 to $20 get matched up to 9-1 by the city. So they're a really big deal. $20 makes you an almost, a big player on a campaign in Portland these days. So I hope you'll consider it for me or anyone on this panel that you like tonight. And I'm Cornette for Portland.com with 4 being spelled out. Thanks so much.
I'm not sure we can do the soliciting of donations on a nonprofit radio station, but we'll let that go. Dan?
Yeah. So I think, realistically, one of my biggest qualifications here is that I am a father. And honestly, I think being a father and loving your city, those are two great things that that's really all you need, I think. And I'd like to just stress that I think about a lot of my policy platforms in terms of land use and how we can best use the limited space we have in our city, in terms of dense housing, in terms of transit systems, in terms of infrastructure. And there are a lot of things that are terribly wasted in our city. I really think that we have the opportunity here to build a city that is sustainable, that is ecologically sustainable and financially sustainable going forward. I think I think our best days are still ahead of us here in Portland, and I'm really excited to have a chance to build that. My website is danforportland.com.
Dan, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate your participation, as with all of you. Theo.
Yeah, my website is theohathawaysaner.com. Go check me out. My time on the city council is going to be focused on housing, mental health, and addiction services. We need to get more affordable housing in Portland to dig out of this. Also, I'm really excited to be part of this new structure of government, which is really going to be all about collaborating. And so each district is going to have 3 representatives. I want to be the guy that you can call when you have an issue with that mall on your street or something. So once again, Theo Hathaway Saner. TheoHathawaySaner.com. Thanks.
Thank you, Theo. And thank you for being here. Daniel, you're up.
I'm Daniel DeMello, and this is KBOO Progressive Talk Radio. The root of progressive is progress. Yep. And while we've seen a lot of Portland politicians pay lip service and gesture at progressive ideals, they've failed to deliver on making meaningful progress on the problems our community faces. The Portland I see does not make sense. I've done the work. I've been marching in Portland Black Lives Matter protests for more than 10 years. I've chaired a tenants union. I've been arrested for blocking pipeline construction through a red line neighborhood. And I've worked with Portland's top civil rights attorneys to hold police accountable in the courts. I'm a man of action. I'm ready to deliver progress. Visit demelloforportland.com or at demelloforportland on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. I'm Daniel DeMello. I'm ready to make Portland make sense.
Thank you, Daniel. I really appreciate all of your time. I have a comment here real quick. Will be interesting to see who gets endorsed by the Portland. Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. That's another whole discussion, Angelita. So, everybody, thank you so much for being here. Portland, we have a District 3 election coming up in November. Get out your voters' pamphlets when they come in and research each of these candidates. I will be building a page with all of your information on it. And as soon as the recording is available, I'll be sending it to each of you. You can chop it up and do as you wish for marketing. Thank you for being here. I really appreciate it. And thank you, KBOO listeners, PDX Progressive Talk Radio. We're signing out. Have a great night.
About a place somewhere up in New York way, where the people are so gay, twisting the night away. Here they have a lot of fun, putting trouble on the run. Man, you find the old and young, twisting the night away. They're twisting, twisting. Everybody's feeling great. They're twisting, twisting, they're twisting the night away. Here's a man in evening clothes. How he got here, I don't know. But man, you ought to see him go twisting the night away. He's dancing with the chicken slacks. She's moving up and back. Oh man, there ain't nothing like twisting the night away. They're twisting, twisting. Everybody's feeling great. They're twisting, twisting. They're twisting the night. Let's twist the one. Twisting the night away. Man, you ought to see her go twisting to the rock and roll. Here you find the young and old twisting the night away. They're twisting, twisting, man. Everybody's feeling great. They're twisting, twisting. They're twisting the night.
You are tuned to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. Up next will be Ditch Digger.
Public Radio.